Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. And Joe, we're bringing in a special guest today, a man who this weekend on the 12th is about to become a Wall of Famer to join being a Hall of Famer, Jacob Austin Young. Jay, man, it's great to have you here. Welcome back to Stateside. This is going to be your first visit to the FSW Arena in almost 2 years now, man. It's crazy.
I think it's just over a year. Just over a year. I think it was like August of last year before I started. But I'm excited to be back. I would have tried to get in sooner, scheduling-wise. Me and Joe had talked a little bit when I found a little bit of time home in between the tours, but this was the most time I've had here stateside since I started with New Japan.
After he left so high and dry just to go to Japan, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question, Joe. What was your initial reaction? Because, you know, Jake was in the midst of, you know, being a champion in FSW, and then he's just like, you know what, I'm going to go to the other place.
Well, you know, I really need to blame TJP, because from what I understand, he helped get Jake in, and even TJP had some heat with Jake. He's like, yeah, I got Jake in, and now they don't book me anymore. What's going on?
He did help get me in. They were looking for somebody, and I'm pretty sure he had recommended myself, and he also recommended Templario, who's another member of the United Empire. I think they went with me because Templario's commitments with CMLL makes him a little bit busier than I am. So we can blame TJP on the getting me into the New Japan and United Empire.
You know, now that your prices are similar, I can just book him too every once in a while.
Yeah, I think he's pretty busy in Mexico as of late. I keep seeing him and Templario teaming in CMLL.
Well, you know, when you make that transition and you show up in Japan, how difficult was it for you to come in there and basically have to kind of earn that respect? Because it's tough. It's not easy. It's not like, you know, just show up in, you know, California and wrestle for this promoter and then go to Arizona, wrestle for that promoter. You know, you're showing up there and now you have a chain of command and a lot of guys who have been doing it for a while out there. How did you get to the point where you earned these guys respect and started to get booked more, because you weren't necessarily guaranteed when you went over there?
Yeah, I think going in, because I might like not have as much of a perceived name. So like these guys, a lot of the Japanese talent, they're not going to know who I am. I'm just kind of coming in off the word of TJP. So a lot of it depends on my body of work when I'm, you know, performing and, you know, getting in there and kind of my commitment to the company as a whole. And being able to, you know, stay in Japan. Like, I wouldn't just come in for a tour and then come back home. I was gone.
Right.
I did the first tour and came back. And then from, like, October to January, I was in Japan. I wasn't home once. I came back in December for New Japan Strong Show. That was it. So I came back to California really quick and then right back to Japan. So, and that was basically the whole year, was just coming home maybe 2 weeks after 3 months. And I think that the time spent in between the tours, as well as being on the road, that's what really kind of earned that respect, is like a commitment to the company and the business.
Right. You know, what's it like traveling with those guys out there? Is it, you know, you got to see, I mean, some of the postings that you did with the countryside and some of the things you get to see, man. But also to have, you know, a chance to bond with a lot of these guys that, you know, you really are just starting to really get to know. I mean, that's got to be just a spectacular life experience, man.
Yeah, I think I love Japan. It's super beautiful. So getting to kind of go up and down the country has been really incredible. And just seeing the architecture and the towns. It's been such a blast. And then being able to kind of share that with the guys in the United Empire, like Callum Newman, like reached out to me before I was even in Japan and told me we should like get together, hang out, and then like show me the ropes and stuff like that. And like the first day that I showed up, Akira was at the dojo training, and like he showed me around the neighborhood that the dojo's at. So everybody was super welcoming. And then once we got on the road and we're on tour, you know, we're going from hotel to hotel, town to town, and, you know, occasionally going out to dinners together, you really bond with these guys, that especially when you're in a unit together, you're going out all the time. And everybody in United Empire was so welcoming. So it really made the transition a lot easier.
And it's also good when you can go out to dinner and actually eat good food, not compared to like China, where it's like, oh, we're going out to dinner. It's like, great, we'll be home in 20 minutes because the food sucks.
Yeah. The food is definitely really well made, really well in Japan, and the variety is so awesome. I love going out to like Yakiniku and getting grilled meat. But even if like it's a late night and we're in like a smaller town and the food options are really limited, we can go to like a 7-Eleven. And the food is just like super high quality, which is like so appreciated when you're traveling on the road and you're staying to, trying to stay like eating clean and whatnot. So it makes life a little bit easier.
Yeah, which
the spam wasabi corn dog at the 7-Eleven in Tokyo is excellent.
I was just saying, Joe, that doesn't mean that you can start hitting the 7-Eleven here and snacking on their
food.
Yeah, I get a little walk into a 7-Eleven here stateside, and it's kind of just like, oh wait, this is not what I'm used to right now.
You know, thinking back, you know, again, this a big honor being up there on the wall, and you know, everything that you had to do, obviously in Japan to earn a contract there, is, you know, something that's everyone strives to do, right? Mm-hmm. But going back and thinking about just the times I've talked to Joe about how you started here and everything that you gave up to, you know, become someone who was chasing that goal, you know, you've achieved it now. Going back in your mind, man, what did you see for yourself in terms of how hard was it to just move here and, you know, go through those motions in that first year or two in trying to chase that dream?
I looking back, and when I like would talk to people about it, I think it is looked at as maybe difficult. I think I tend to be pretty optimistic, and I think I was just so excited at the chance of wrestling. I didn't put it into my head at like my living situation, which I'm super grateful that I had, because it provided me a chance to then train. But I was living in like a double wide trailer, but I was in the enclosed patio. So occasionally there were days where I accidentally got locked out of the house. I couldn't access like my food and stuff like that.
I saw the Hefe about 6 months ago.
Did you really now?
Yeah, I was in a Smith's, and he like walked right past me, and I'm like, bro. And then he was like, oh, hey, Joe, blah, blah, blah. And I talked about you going, because you had just started going there, and because he actually did a commercial. Yeah. We were doing some stuff with a company, and he was like the ring announcer for their commercial that they hired separately. Yeah. So, yeah, that's funny because, man, I remember when you lived with him at that double wide.
Yeah. Yeah. It was me, Hefe, and his roommate. And, it was just a place to sleep. I was on an air mattress, and it was just like I just needed a space. And, you know, again, occasionally if he would be on the road, or not on the road, but at the training, so he would drive us back. But if I was just going to training myself, I was taking two buses, because where we were at on Boulder Highway, I was at on Las Vegas Boulevard south of the Strip. So it would take me a couple hours to get the training. But just to have the chance to pursue this at this – I was 19 at the time. Like, just to have that opportunity is what I was chasing. So it's like I can look back and recognize stuff was difficult, but I've really been blessed with opportunity after opportunity and being able to capitalize on that. And I think that's what kind of like maybe makes it a little bit easier, because I think with wrestling, you need to go in with an understanding that you're going to sacrifice a bit. But for what is the possibility of an outcome, like that's what you're doing it for.
Right. Sure. Joe, your earliest recollection of, you know, seeing Jake, and is it true now, because Joe brought this up last week, is it true that Joe is the one who came up with the name?
I said I wasn't sure. I remember, yeah. Because
for Jacob Austin Young?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you gave me the last name Young because we were tagging with Greg. So we did Gorgeous and Young.
Right. So okay, G-A-Y. I wasn't positive, but it was like,
Yeah.
We didn't get the chance that I expected with the Gorgeous and Young.
Yeah. So we did that. And so then I was just Austin Young for a while. And then when we put me with Bryce and we turned me heel, Bryce, his idea was he wanted to just call me Young Jacob, which was like a Scott Pilgrim versus the World bit. There's a character called Young Neil. So that was his idea. But then Joe came up with Jacob Austin Young, Jacob with a K, because he, from what I remember, you were talking about like serial killers. John Wayne Gacy, like that was the three names, because it was different. Either guys had one name or just like a regular name. So Jacob Austin Young was just to stand out and be a little bit different.
Yeah, because and the following was based because of the TV series. It was not based on it, but the concept behind it. And it was funny because I was going through, because I hit up your boy Fow about, you know, putting together a little, you know, 2-minute video package. Mm. So it was like, hey, and then I found the first thing that came up was the entrance video for Jacob Austin Young.
Yeah.
Which was the song from the following, which we used, which was perfect.
Yeah.
It was just crazy how that concept got put together. But looking at it, like, man, you were already around. You were past the Gorgeous and Young days and the following, and you look so young.
Yeah.
Compared to now. And it was like you were already a couple of years in at that point.
Yeah.
And then we also had, which I thought was a breakout for you, was that From the Vault that we did, that I loved that, because that was the first time anybody got to really see the real you in an atmosphere discussing things. And that was we did Cross and we did, you know, the Whirlwind Gentleman. But my favorite one was always the one with you, because it showed everybody who you really were that nobody got a chance to see. So that's why I ended up posting it the other day. And we got a good amount of views on it. So hopefully some new people who didn't know about it, you know, got a chance to check it out. And it brings up a lot of, you know, how you started in the early days and how, you know, you went to a show, talked to Kid Vegas and said, fuck it, I'm moving to Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just watching that. My girlfriend and I were, she was looking at it because it wasn't something that I think she had seen before. And she was like seeing the interview parts. And in the interview parts, I'm like talking about doing the Sling Blade because of Tanahashi. And now it's at a point where I'm like wrestling him and doing the move on him and talking about how much of influence Japanese wrestling was on me at that time, which was maybe 2015. So this is like 10 years ago at that point. And then
nobody knew who Finn Balor was. It was like,
So it's just like, it's kind of, that was really cool to see. It's kind of like the journey, you know, kind of like reminds you of like where I've been and how long the journey's been, and kind of like, you know, puts it really into perspective.
And for me, I always enjoyed watching the offensive arsenal that you had because, you know, it gets kind of redundant in the indies where you see a lot of people with the same stuff. And you had that fresher aspect that it wasn't any different. It was just the fact that nobody else at that time was utilizing some of the Japanese influence in there. So it was always fun to have a Jacob Austin Young match. And I always go back and, you know, talk about the match you had with Eli Everfly when nobody knew who he was either. That was like, was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I always just kind of, I think I remember when we were being trained, and I don't know if it was like a Modest thing or a Remy thing, but the idea of like, don't do stuff that's being done on television, because if you were to get like called up, you wouldn't be able to do that move. So don't do it like now. And I kind of, maybe, I don't know if I kind of like break my own rule with doing Sliced Bread or Jacob's Ladder now. But nobody was doing it in New Japan, so I kind of got away with that, making that my finish. But that was kind of the mentality. So I was like, okay, what's everybody doing? Everybody's doing stuff they're watching on TV. No one's really doing the Japanese stuff. So I was like, there's a lot of cool, interesting stuff there to pull from. And I was just a fan of it. I liked the sports aspect of it and the way that it was presented. And I think that really kind of put me in a – it really separated me from the kind of class that I was in.
Okay. Your first thoughts about when Joe finally gave you that opportunity to have a title and that responsibility that came with, you know, having your first championship at FSW?
I have like conflicting feelings on it. Always super grateful for that opportunity, but there was a lot of things that kind of happened because of that. So we ended up doing the No Limits title win with Ryan Taylor was because Bryce tore his ACL, I believe. So it was kind of like we were trying to build to me and Bryce in a big story. And right. When he tore his ACL, it kind of like took that away. And so there is a bit of disappointment of like, oh, we were building to this thing. Then we do the No Limits tournament and I get to wrestle Ryan Taylor and really get to go on to have a like pair, not a pair, but like I think three different matches with him that were really, really good. So it taught me a lot. I got put into a chance, like I got a chance to really learn working with him because he was so experienced. He was so good and he was so giving too. Like he was, you know, he was so jacked. He was so talented. And especially I think back on this time, you know, I'm a little critical of myself, but like, I was like, man, compared to him, I was like nobody, but he was so giving to me is in that moment and in that match that I was able to grow immensely from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you also worked Willie in that mix of matches in that time frame.
Yeah. That year was really a standout year. I had the time limit draw with Willie. I did the match with, I think, Paul London and Ryan Taylor. I had the match with Kenny King at Mesquite that year. Like there was, I really got a lot to really go against really talented guys, and that really taught me a lot about being kind of like stepping it up from just being like another guy in the show and being like a champion to like be a representative of the company and representative of like the school as well.
Yeah, and Joe, for you to you know see what you saw in Jake's talent and also his passion and desire for it, you know, at what point in your mind are you like, you know, I'm going to allow him these opportunities with these guys so that we can, you know, because a lot of times the homegrown talent in places, it's against other guys, right? It's just other talent that might be coming up or is local that no one's never heard of, or, you know, they just don't have that experience, that brand recognition, that, you know, exposure to the business that all these names we just said have had at that point when here you have a young guy who's hungry and you're giving him all these opportunities that year. That's got to be something that crosses your mind as this kid's ready and you're basically making an investment at that point.
Well, you know, the reason I started FSW in the first place in professional wrestling was because I was a fan of wrestling. So I was always in search of, like, doing our very first show and scouring and hearing things. And the Young Bucks get to work our first show because I saw this team that was getting a little spotlight. And it's funny because yesterday came up on the Facebook, and it's always the memories. And it's like, okay, Kenny's the homegrown talent. I get it. He's on our show. But there's a flyer, and it's a Halloween show at the school, and we got Paul London. We got Brian Kendrick. We got Kenny King. We got L.A. Knight. We got the Young Bucks. It's like, this is just a school show. This is fucking insanity. And it's like, I've always wanted to give opportunities when we could. These guys came in and they were more than fair on pricing and giving the opportunities. And, you know, one thing I'll always remember somebody and it's like, oh, hey, why are you bringing in the Reno scum and why are you bringing in these guys? And it's like, because they're better than you. And these particular younger wrestlers wanted to, like, have wins. That's all they cared about was them getting wins. And it was like, but these guys always seem to win. It's like when you earn that win, you have to earn that win. It was like the very first time we brought in, you know, we had Austin Aries. We got lucked out. He was driving. He was quitting wrestling for the first of his 37 quits retirement tours. And he was driving to Minnesota. He was working with Marquez in California. And he was like, we'll do a seminar where he basically told everybody to not take wrestling as a business. It fucking sucks. And he wrestled Bryce Harrison. And Bryce didn't win. And, you know, Bryce wrestled Paul London first. And he didn't win. And it was like, but Bryce became deserving. And then we had a rematch and Bryce won. And it was bigger for him to win then because he earned the victory. It's the old, the big name guy, he's coming to town and he's just going to lose to the other guy and he's not going to earn it. And I remember before we did FSW, we started this Vegas Extreme back in the day and I would get VHS tapes. And when I met Frankie Kazarian, I told him about it. I got this tape. There was this kid, Johnny something. I don't remember who his name was out of Cali. And he ran the company and he wrestled Kazarian and he sends me the tape. And I'm watching the match, and Frankie Kazarian is just fucking night and day. Like, I want to book Frankie Kazarian. I don't want to book this fucking kid. And then all of a sudden at the end, it's like bing, bang, boom, and the other guy wins. And it was like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, this was embarrassing that this guy has to put himself over. And getting back, it was like, okay, hey, we got an opportunity to have Rocky Romero come in, which – Jake gets the match with Rocky Romero. 10 years later, I would think that would probably be a major influence because Rocky now knows Jake, maybe with the New Japan Strong and all the stuff. Now a relationship got made. And again, it might have been minute back then, but over time, it ended up building. And I was always big with that because we had Eugene, Nick Dinsmore, as one of our first seminars. Great turnout. Bring him back about a year later. And two people show up to the Nick Dinsmore seminar. Like, Eugene taught everybody everything he knew in 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And it was like, guess what? A year later, Nick Dinsmore is one of the trainers at WWE. Right. And other than Corky McPatrick, who was never going to get an opportunity, the only one who kind of repeated the seminar type thing or whatever was like, when you make these connections like we have now with Gabe Sapolsky, and that's how Ice got involved in the ID, and that's what this business is, there's a lot more really good wrestlers than really good wrestlers on shows. Mm-hmm. It's just there's just too many. So the only way you're going to get an opportunity is if you made a connection with somebody. And I was always big on, you know, good opportunities, great stuff for tape. And that's what we always offered because we would get the best of the best who would come in and not be doing it to make money. Because at the end of the day, what they got for the trip was probably at best a break even. Right. But FSW became the standalone place for the SoCal guys and the Arizona guys that they wanted to come here. Because they knew, oh, shit, we're going to get to wrestle the Reno scum. And you'd get people from – you get the best guys from NorCal and the best guys from Reno and the best guys from Arizona and the best guys from SoCal and maybe some other places. And they'd all meet in Las Vegas because FSW from day one, like a Ryan Taylor, like a Brandon Gatson, like a Derek Nykerk and Mike Knox and that crew from Arizona – and the SoCal crew from Santino and the when we would bring in the Bad Dude Tito's, and then look at Che Cabrera where he started and Douglas James. And you had, you know, it was a who's who of independent wrestling on the West Coast, and we were in the forefront. Plus, we had Mike Modis as a trainer. We had Kenny King as a trainer. And then all these young cats, the Gregory Sharps, the Jacob Austin Youngs, the Bryce Harrisons, the Remy Marcells, you know, man. And we've continued to this day that the roster, like I said, I'll put our roster up with anybody's bar none.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, and going back to what Jake was talking about when he won the title, you know, nothing ever existed like the following. It just became this big thing. And it's really mind-boggling that you don't see that type of faction that got created in an indie company that became as big as it did. And the whole story with Bryce Harrison and Jacob Austin Young was, wow, nobody can beat Bryce Harrison for the No Limits title. But there might be one guy who's in the following that's the guy. And that was the story that was being built, and people were getting behind it, and Jake was the guy. And, you know, he talks about the disappointment. Yeah, and I talked to somebody last week about it, that we finally ended up getting the match, and it was great. Yeah. And Joey has that perfect picture with you and Bryce shaking hands. But, man, that was probably a year and a half after it needed to be.
Yeah.
Because it was like bringing in Shelly Martinez was an unbelievable move. Like, how did we get that move? But she fit in perfect. And, you know, where we were going to go with the tag team, because in the perfect world, it might have been Cody and Jake initially. But we ended up having Duke, and a guy like Evan Daniels was talked about before Duke. But Evan Daniels was another No Limits guy that would have been mixed in. And Big Duke was just a low card guy who happened to show up and be on some shows. And, you know, he would aggravate us in the beginning, like, hey, you need to get matching gear, bro. Like, he wasn't behind it at all. You know, years later, then after he motherfucks me about everything, but he was like the last guy to try to get on board with that. And we needed him because he was different than the rest of the group. And right. We didn't need another No Limits guy like Evan Daniels in there, who was just the piece. You know, that was the final pawn of where we were going, you know, in that situation. And I'll tell you what a great run it was, because even after the fact, when we did the reunion, the people were behind it. And then, you know, Jake got his run with Cody. Right. And for those, you know, who were behind that, it's like you see it in that entrance video. This all started because Jacob Austin Young threw a fireball at Cody's face. So when we did Sharp, that was the one thing. So when the following reunited, because Bryce ended up leaving, he went to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
He was going to do this. You know, he was going to be the next president of the United States, or he was going to be Trump's buddy. I don't know what he was doing, but he went over there. And then when he came back, we kept everything a secret. Jake already had the cash in the case. And when Cody aligned and he unmasked, the crowd was like, what the fuck? And now we're talking about a low card guy that people were behind to begin with the Crash Test Cody gimmick. So it was like, it was the perfect thing. And it was funny because I remember Sharp and Brandon Gatson were in the main event, and they were all like, Sharp was all worried, like, oh, I'm in the main event. Who's going to care? Because, you know, Sharp's never had a good match, if you ask Greg. Every match, it was okay, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and everything worked brilliantly in that. And it was like, wow, that was like, you know, if that happened in WWE, it would be one of, like, the greatest stories of all time.
Yeah, what's your recollections of that, Jake? Because that's one of Joe's favorite memories.
I remember, like, I remember a lot of it pretty vividly. I remember, you know, when even as far back before we started the following, I wrestled Bryce, and it was kind of then Like we had like a regular singles match on a show, and that's I think the idea had come up of like him. I don't know if he was the group, but he was. I was gonna basically be his lackey and take the bumps for him because he was gonna get that run, and then going into that, and then I want to say I can't remember if Shelly got incorporated before we brought in Duke and Cody. Before I think
no, Shelly she came after.
I think she was involved because Bryce's last match was was the Matt Hardy match because I think Shelly had wrestled Rebby or something like that. I think she was somewhere
involved. Yeah, she did. That is correct.
Yeah.
I don't know if she was involved with them, though.
I want to say that maybe she was there at Mesquite. I don't know. But
she wasn't Mesquite because they had the two matches.
Yeah. So then Bryce left, and then that was – I don't know if that was the night that I won Cash in a Case or not. But then, right, we had Cash in the Case, and I don't think we had plans for it quite yet until we learned that Bryce was coming back, and then the idea of Cody coming and joining us was kind of like we were all on board for that. And then I remember talking to Joe about, like, the idea of Evan, and I think Evan would have been great in the role. I think we agreed that, like, it would have been four smaller No Limits guys, and we needed kind of a heater.
Right.
And Duke fit that role so well as just the big guy. And I really feel like him and Cody worked pretty well together into the matches that they had with the Whirlwind Gentlemen, especially the street fight that they had. So it was pretty much just Whirlwind in a bottle. And that night that we kind of did the unmasking of like Cody unmasking as this heel, the reveal of Duke is with us. My unmasking, then it was like, who's got, like, Bryce was literally wearing my costume, my gear, to kind of, like, trick everybody into thinking that it was me cashing in. And then when I took the mask off, it's like, oh, who it is. And then he takes it off, cashes in, and then we kind of have that. Going into that summer, I feel like, was just, like, a crazy run of just, like, we were definitely the hottest act at the time.
Right. When you think about then, you know, the following, you know, again, it ends and you come together to do the Hall of Fame thing. And now you get this opportunity to now start tagging with Cody. I think that, you know, just that run as a tag team, you could see that the fans probably were into you guys almost, you know, more than they'd been into, you know, some of the other tag teams, because it was a hard time for the tag team division, and Death Proof kind of gave a lot of life, especially with so many young tag teams coming up. You guys gave the opportunities for these kids to get a lot of experience, and I think that was one of the most invaluable things that you guys could have provided.
Yeah, 100%. Like, stability, I feel like. You know, it kind of, we did the tag, or it turned into the handicap match at the anniversary show against the Hater Nation. And that kind of felt like, it felt really good. The audience really felt behind us. And it was kind of like, all right, let's do this run. Because that's where that's kind of what, I don't know if needed is the right word, but for what FSW, that's the place that we could fit. Because if we were just coming in then as singles guys, that's two more roles that Joe's got to fill in whether it's both No Limits, wherever. But as a team, it was just like there might have been the space for it. And that kind of lend itself to like, hey, we are cool being wherever because we're going to make it the best that we can. And if it's like, you know, it's something that I had only done a little bit with when I was teaming with Jace Battle. But we didn't get to the heights that we got with Death Proof. And me and Cody were just like so gung-ho about working together. And really, like, again, that felt like fire in a bottle. Like, we workshopped the Death Proof name on accident, really. We were thinking of like the Death Wish coffee, but then the movie of Death Proof kind of came up. And that kind of just really worked. And just the aesthetic of it and just everything, I think we got to work with a lot of really young guys, and they always did really good business with us to make us look really good so that we could then in turn return that when we would work with guys and put them over, like building into the unguided stuff. Like I felt like that really helped out a lot to kind of establish Matt and Damian as like pretty viable threats. They were doing really great stuff. I thought the stuff they did with Sky High really established them in that heel role. And then it kind of felt like we were these two big teams to compete. And I recently went back and rewatched our title match that we did where we went almost like 20 minutes that led into Matt's attack on Damian Drake afterwards. Like I'm proud of that one because I was like, I felt like maybe our peak match as far as a team, I felt.
Hey, here's a little known fact that in the following, when Jacob Austin Young was going to basically leave and take out Bryce, Damian Drake was the guy that was going to be the new lackey.
Yeah, I remember that being the idea talked about a bunch. They ended up working against each other when Bryce had stepped away for a little bit after the injury. And I know that when he came back, before I got to work him in his last match, he was doing a program with Damian Drake for a little bit.
You know, and it's crazy because there's things, it was like having the conversations that things that you don't expect to happen. Like we didn't expect him and Cody to be a tag team after the thing. It's mind boggling to me how things just organically just pop in my head. And it was like, hey, why don't we do this? And then all of a sudden we had Death Proof as, you know, a major tag team for a year and a half. And, you know, and that's also the good part of being around so long, where now Jake has ideas and Cody has ideas and Remy has ideas and Sharp has ideas. There's so many people that walk into my office, and now it's Ice and he's got these ideas. And there's always, the thing is churning, and it's like, man, sometimes you wonder if the juices are there for all these things. And as you know, as I continue to get older, it's like, all right, what are we going to do here in FSW? It's just like, it's just mind-boggling to me that it just keeps going. And it's just like, you know, I don't feel any different at 60 than I did at 40. You know what I mean? And it's like, I now understand how a guy like Vince McMahon did it forever. And it's like, wow, well, this guy's old. Why don't he retire? And it's like, man, if you get the bug, you know, no matter how many of these younger kids piss me off and, you know, they're all fuck ups and delusional. It's just that one little thing that you see, and it's like, oh shit, Jake's going to Japan. Like that, all of a sudden, is like it raises the juices. And it was like, first it was, hey, him and Sharp, they're wrestling each other, but now they got to be a tag team in like the same week at New Japan. It's like, you know, I can't be like, hey, you better tell New Japan that you can't work that show. You know what I mean? It's like, but it's wrestling. And in 2022 and 24 and 25, it's okay. You know, because we can do whatever we need to do, and whatever we try to lead the fans, they will buy into it if it's done well. And we think we've done well. So, you know, it's crazy. You know, I know you're buddies, and you helped me get Damian Desire here. Yep. And with what we're doing with Transcendence is now they're wrestling Class in Reno on Friday, former champions. They beat the Faction. They beat Sky High. And it's like, man, the idea of them, you know, they're bragging already 3 months in, the greatest tag team of all time, and they're taking out all the FSW tag team champions. It's like, you know, in the back of my head, like, does Cody got one more match? And they left the Death Group. You know what I mean? We got Jake. How cool would it be? Because Bryce Saturn, in the short time that we've had, has reinvented himself. He's fantastic. Yep. You know, I like Damian Desire, but I love Bryce Saturn. You know what I mean? It's like, this guy's got himself in unbelievable shape. I didn't realize that these guys are really, really good on a microphone. They work really good. Like, they got forced into winning the tag titles because I really didn't have anybody, and Fox got hurt. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to change all this craziness about it. It's like, you know what? They're getting the match. I guess they're going to be the tag team champions. And they've grown into that role. And it's like, man, Death Proof versus Transcendence would have been a fucking killer match. Because I was even thinking, like, at luck of the draw, like, if they were the champs, it would be like we would put them up against the Gods of War, Death Proof, and, you know, another team that used to hold the title and have, like, a four-way match. I just got hit up today, believe it or not, by the Commandos. Hey, it's been a long time, bro. Like, imagine that four-way tag. That would be fucking insanity.
That would be. That'd be a little cruel to those new boys, because we would be fucking them up.
Yeah, you know. So, it's, you know, it's still in the back of the head that's a possibility, even if it is maybe not Death Proof, because obviously in November Jake will be back. But, man, having the Commandos and shit, Reno Scum one night only, you know what I mean? Or Royce and Jarrell. We've had some great fucking tag teams.
Yeah. What's that like for you, Jake, now, too, where you can, you know, look at someone like Damian Desire and, you know, pass along, you know, your recommendations, and then not only do they get the opportunity, but they prove themselves. And, you know, because, you know, that's a big thing where, you know, the word of mouth and being able to really vouch for people, you're in a great position now where, you know, these people who you see and you enjoy and, you know, can be friends of yours, get an opportunity to then get that same experience you had here in terms of being able to get that rise and hopefully get to where they want to be in the future.
Yeah. I think just from, like, personal experience, having somebody go to bat for you can do a lot. Because, like Joe was talking about, it's about kind of who you know sometimes. That has really got to do with the case with me, being able to get to New Japan, knowing TJP, being able to commit myself to staying over there and my own, like, natural ability that I've developed. When it came to Damian Desire, I got to see him and meet him for the first time out here, just training. I was working, just wanted to get, like, some in-ring time. So I would go to R3, Charles Cassis classes, and he was there. Yeah. And he had good aptitude, you know, but again, I'm not going to base anything just on that. But once he started working and going and wrestling on shows and getting places, I could tell that he was good. What really did it for me as far as backing him was he wanted to get in the car and ride with me to shows. If we ended up on shows together in Vegas, maybe not at FSW at the time, but other Vegas shows, we would ride together, because I was just trying to get reps in. I was just looking for work. So he was coming with just to, you know, hear me kind of tell stories of my own experience and what I think works for me. Again, I think wrestling is flavors of ice cream. Nothing is gospel. But I'm like, this is what's worked for me. And he listened and he used what's worked for him. Yeah. And what doesn't work for him, that's totally cool, you know. But then he made the point to be like, I want to be at FSW. And I told him, I'm like, I can recommend you, but I know what Joe looks for when it comes to newer, younger talent. He'd like commitment. It's not a thing of, like, you can't work anywhere else. He just wants you to commit to FSW and make it a priority. Because, like Joe was talking about earlier, with, like, the PCW running the next day, you know, when schedules and stuff come up, it's difficult. But if you're fully committed to the show, that makes it a lot easier. Right. And so when he kind of gave me that, like, hey, I'll do that, I'll go to Joe. And I'm not going to just recommend anybody. I've maybe recommended two people to Joe as far as, like, yeah, this is my full stamp of approval. And that would have been Damian Desire and Thugnificent.
Yeah, I was just going to bring him up. And it's like, no matter what, if you look at any of my outside talent, I would say at least 90% of those guys I only used because somebody I respect told me about it. Class was recommended by Dom and Hammerstone and Graves. And, you know, and at the time, Watson was recommended by Graves and Hammerstone. And Thugnificent, that's the only reason I used him. He had hit me up. I got hit up by a million people. But Jake recommended him. Same thing with the Santino crew. And literally, unless they drive in and they know the routine, especially PCW, they got the easy access. It's Dom's crew. It's Hammerstone. It's Graves. But the Arizona Wrestling Federation guys or the guys who don't work PCW, they aren't getting in unless somebody like Jake says something. Like, I knew EJ Sparks. Like, when I did some stuff in Arizona in the past, I remember EJ worked that show we did, and it was Willie Mack versus Hammerstone. Tyson Tyler let me book a taco festival out there, and it was a great show. And EJ, because he was there, I used him. But I never used EJ in Vegas until it was like, hey, my partner is EJ Sparks. I'm like, oh, I know him, blah, blah, blah. And we brought him out, and we like him. They've had the worst luck, I'll tell you what. You know, they were booked again. They did something. The rim got bent. Again, they didn't make it. The show, two shows before that, EJ got fucked up.
Yep.
They've missed more shows than they've almost made, you know, and I've used Thugnificent a couple times. He had a really good match with Shogun. He had a good, you know, a couple months ago, he showed up at Future Shock, had a really good match. And I like those guys a lot, but you miss a show, you miss a second show. It's just hard because there's so many guys. And Saturn was the same thing. I used him, and Jake's 1,000% right when we're talking about the commitment thing. I'm like, I don't tell anybody where and where they cannot work. I don't tell any of my local guys not to work for the company down the street. But I do emphasize that, A, they're not your company. So you need to be paid from them. And you need to be put in a decent situation. Because a lot of times, a lot of these companies, they were trained by FSW. Well, let's make sure we get our guys our wins over the FSW guys. Like, that's going to make their company any better. It's not, because they aren't going to promote it. They aren't going to market it. They aren't going to do anything. They just want to run shows. So Damian Desire came to me and I said, hey, bro, you know, I appreciate it. And I had that same conversation with Bryce Saturn. I'm like, but the bottom line is I have enough of my own guys that work all these other shows. You don't really have any value to me when I can see you at any of these other shows that sometimes are free, sometimes are $5. Like, why should I put you on the show over some kid who's paying me $250 a month to train? And he's pretty decent. He may not be at your level, but I don't need guys from Arizona or California who are working all these other shows.
Right.
And he's like, well, I have one more show with them after that. So now I almost feel like, hey, I told you this. I'm kind of obligated to use you because I basically said I'd use you if you didn't work somewhere else. Basically saying, hey, because again, if it's a guy that I don't think is worthy or he's any good, it's going to be like, yeah, and I really don't have a spot for you.
Right.
You know, and then Bryce Adden was the same way. He had moved to North Carolina, I guess, for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Or whatever. He happened to work a show. I'm like, oh, this kid seems pretty decent. But then the same thing happened. He came in and started using him. And then he said the same thing. So that's why I started using him. Because I said, no offense. Yeah, you're pretty good. And then from that point on to where he is now is night and day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's gotten himself in phenomenal shape. Like I said, talks great on the microphone. And Bryce was doing both, because if Damian Desire for a while, he couldn't make it. I don't know what he was hurt, I believe. And Saturn ended up having like a fantastic match with Ice Williams at a Future Shock. And it was like, okay. And then he did something with Vandegrift. And it was like, I could go either way with him. But then because of Desire, and again, now you got two spots to fill, or you have one tag team to fill.
Yeah.
And then they kind of walked into, hey, they've been doing good. And we put them in the position. It's like with the regulators and Thugnificent, it's, you know, trying to make things work. The Suavecitos are back and the Mariachis have caught fire, you know. And the funny thing is, Makeshift Chemistry, that was our tag team champions, they both got injured around the same time. And now they're training and looking to come back, and there's really no tag team spot for them. even though it seems like they're looking like they want to do single stuff anyway. And I'm like, because I really don't got a spot for these guys to the tag team. And that's my, and that's my last tag team champs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how crazy the tag team division is built up. And if we get that one night only Death Proof match, forget it.
I, you know, it's, it'd be interesting, but I don't know if Cody would feel the same way.
I don't know. Have we ever done Death Proof versus the Gods of War?
I'm trying to think. I think no. I think it, I wrestled with Duke against Hammer and Graves
did at you?
Sam's Town. Yeah, we did.
It was me. I thought maybe back in the day it was possible.
Yeah. We did a we did the tag match with them.
Triple threat with Che and Tito now? Forget it. Jake's going to be like, hey, New Japan, I need one more week off. I'll be back. I'll be there October 25th. I'll have to work FSW October 18th. Oh, wait, you'll be around the 18th now. Oh.
I think I might. Yeah, I might be available.
Who knows? Got to make the call. See if we can make it happen. Tito hits me up all the time trying to come in.
Yeah. Tito's so good, man.
Oh. Well, you know what? That brings me to this question. And I think, you know, talking about Bryce Saturn, talking about Tito, and I think that you are very reflective in how you've taken your development of your body as a professional seriously. And it's amazing to see, you know, if you look at the transformation in, you know, 10 years, you know, at what point did it click for you in terms of, you know, I really need to focus in on the look and the size as compared to, you know, seeing if I want to get to the next level, that's something I have to show that I'm very serious about.
I think what, cause I would like work out, but I was never like locked in about it until COVID had happened and I put weight on and I just didn't like the way that I looked. Like, cause we had time off and then we came back and I was doing some shows, some FSW shows. And I was just like, man, I do not like the way that I look. Sure. Cause I felt like I looked fine before, but I was a lot more active. So then I was like, all right, I got to focus on the gym and just get more involved with kind of understanding how important food is when it comes to your body, how important rest and recovery is when it comes to your body, especially with what we do physically, putting our bodies, especially this last year. Like, I think I did a total of like over 100 matches in this year for New Japan.
Wow. That many. I didn't realize that. Holy
cow. I think it was exactly 100. Again, it would be like, you know, 2 weeks. So you do a match, have a day off, maybe two more matches, day off, you know, it varied from time to time. And so then sometimes getting to training would be difficult. And that's what I appreciate about this downtime is that I can kind of train a little bit more, and focus on it because it is important, not just for your physical look, but just for the health of your body, because what we do, it's a lot of damage over time, of just, you know, the bumps and the drops and just putting on muscle mass to kind of protect yourself and protect your joints is super important. And I've kind of noticed a difference on my body where I when I was smaller, I'd be feeling it for a few days after the fact. Whereas now it's like, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm pretty good. Especially when I was doing matches as much as I was, like this last tour during the G1, I was like, I think I did 17 in the 4 weeks. And I wasn't even doing the singles matches that the heavyweights were doing. I was just doing tag matches every night. But I was still, like, there would be times where I'm like, and that little bit of that is from just traveling. Like, you're on a bus for a few hours or traveling from hotel to hotel. It's hard to get rest, but it's super important. I think one, as a professional, I think you want to look your best, and all bodies come in different shapes and sizes. You know, I don't think you have to all look like Hammerstone, even though Hammer looks great right now. You know,
Che Cabrera, if Che Cabrera could start getting in shape, he'll be one to watch out for.
So I think finding what works best for you to protect yourself and kind of present yourself in the best way possible, you know, that's you can see it with talents. I think, like, you know, when guys get into really good shape, they're it really changes people's perspective on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as we get close to kind of wrapping up here, what does it mean to you when you think about, you know, and we're not talking about wrestling in the arena here on the 12th. You know, you'll obviously be participating in a match, but at the same time, you're walking into the arena and you're going to, for any other time from that day on, you walk into the FSW arena, you're going to see yourself on that wall, man. What does that mean to you, man? That's crazy.
It's, I think it's really cool. I think it'll hit me more being there and seeing it, because having wrestled in that building and seeing so many of the guys and girls on the wall, like, especially guys like, I think of the Reno Scum when I came up, those guys were super influential, of just people that I respected because of how talented they were and how professional they were. And then to see guys like Kevin and Chris up there because of how special they are, how just they were, you know, they had it, the X factor, they had every, you know, see that. But for me to see myself get up on there, it's like, I think it'll feel really incredible, because it's like, I started so long ago at this school. Like, there was a time where I felt like I was like the best student. Like, I was like, oh, I'm the guy. There was like a period of time, probably from like 2012 to 2014, where I was kind of like starting to slowly build my name, especially during that following period, where I felt like I was like, I'm the representative of the school. Like, people will be like, oh, I want to be that good. And then there were times where I felt like I got passed up by other people, you know, sure, just for other people's opportunities. Not to say that I didn't get stuff. I got to do Global Force Wrestling and I got to do OWE. There was stuff, but it didn't really achieve the heights that I have now. So right. I think for me, it is a bit of a kind of moment to solidify the work that I did, the time that was spent in the building and the training, and to kind of be an example, because that's all I want to be able to do, is like either give back or be an example that if you like show up and work hard and do the work that you need to do, you can find success, you know. And I think FSW is a perfect place for that. I think they give you all the tools to make yourself successful. You just got to do what you got to do, and I hope to be that example. So when people look up at that, you know, it's, I think it would be different than looking at Kevin or Chris, because I think they're so talented and I think they work really, really hard. But I think, like, specifically for me, I felt like I had to work really, really hard. Not to take anything away from those guys, but I was just like, for my journey and like how long it was. And, you know, I think, you know, that's what it means to me.
Yeah, Joe, when you think of that, you know, you essentially are putting up a banner of, you know, out of all the banners, the guy who has had the longest journey to get to that wall.
Oh, yeah, you know, 1,000%. You know, a guy like Chris Bay started with us day one, got signed by TNA. He's getting on the wall. Cross, same way. Solo Sikoa, you know. Zoe had a little bit of the journey in Utah. She had more time in Utah than in Vegas, but everything happened for her when she came to FSW. And, you know, Hammerstone was the guy. You know, people like, oh, well, you know, what about Kenny? And it was like, Kenny was a star before anything. It's like, you know, we're trying, it was kind of based off the school, and Jake's the perfect example. And I go back to when we kind of got basically attacked from within. We had a friend, he wasn't our friend, he started another company. And there was two guys that I will always be forever grateful to, because even some of my best friends in the company left. And they didn't leave because of me. They had issues with Modest or whatever. Remy left and Sugar Brown left. Everybody left. The two people that stayed were Cross and Jacob Austin Young. And looking back, I know I put Jake in a bad position, because when everybody left, I needed Jake to be a trainer. And at that time, I know for a fact he did not really feel comfortable training a lot of the younger guys, but he did it because he knew I needed it. So I was always forever grateful. And I remember Cross was doing like the, what he could do, which was a promo class, you know, because that was his strength. And Jake being the talented wrestler, who's going to be able to teach him how to wrestle? Not Looney Bin, because he tried to, because he stuck around and was like, dude, what the fuck are you doing trying to teach people stuff? So, you know, I always remember, no matter what, you know, the good, the bad, the indifferent, everything in between. And Jake was the guy that was there for us every, you know, whenever it was needed. And he, you know, he stepped up and, you know, he helped us out when we were not in a great position. You know, everything went back to normal after the fact. And I think, and when I say I look back at that time, I think it was good what happened. Because after that would happen, there was a different respect from everybody involved, including myself, and what people thought or how they thought companies should be run or how they're treated and all the other stuff that, you know, leaving for an extra 20 or 30 bucks doesn't mean that you weren't being taken care of in FSW. And I look at it with the companies now. It's like, what are you getting out of that extra $20 going to wrestle over there? You know what I mean? And it's like, we try to offer so much opportunity that, you know, D'Lo Brown was in the office at TNA and I got Gabe Sapolsky on fucking speed dial and all these guys, every opportunity when TNA comes to town, you get to be on TV, you get maybe a pre-show match, you get opportunities that you won't get anywhere based off the relationships and based off the effort I put forth dealing with these companies. That right. A lot of people don't know about. So that's why you see guys like Sharp being with me forever and Remy being with me forever and Cody being with me forever, or guys like Hammerstone who'll come back to the luck of the draw, big time superstar who could command whatever. And it's still, okay, here's my envelope. Thank you, Joe. See you later. Not worried about what's in it because he's willing to do something for somebody he felt that did something for him. And having Jake back, it was like, hey, where's Jake? Well, he's still in fucking Japan. What do you want me to do? You know,
yeah.
You know, things happen. And it's like, there's me not being a wrestler and just loving wrestling as the guy who runs the place. It's like, there's nothing better for me than being like, seeing Matt Vandergriff getting a major role on the New Japan Strong. And then Jake saying, hey, I'm going to Japan. And we're like, oh, I'm like, that's cool. Like assuming it's going to be like this one time thing. And it's like, that's great. It's an opportunity. Like Tito hasn't been back in a long time. Like Jake stuck. And it's like, man, that is not an easy thing. Because as you said, the longest to get to that spot. You know how easy it would have been for him? He was at the old school. You know, we were doing talking about the rookie of the year angle with Greg Romero and Clutch coming in, deciding to do a Dominator because he's mad. He's like in the mix for rookie of the year and almost fucking breaks Jake's neck, you know? And to see that kid and to see like, wow, you know, we knew he was a good wrestler, but there's a lot of good wrestlers. How do you intertwine through everything to all of a sudden get to your dream? Yeah. And it's almost like living vicariously through them. It's like you go on Facebook and it's like, oh, shit, Jake's got a post. I got to read it, see what he's doing in Japan. That's fucking awesome, you know, or yeah. Cross. And like, oh, this has got to be a work. And it's like, yeah, I talked to Kevin yesterday. Yeah, it wasn't a work. What he told me was the God's honest truth. Mm-hmm. And having this information and knowing it, or when things happen, not being able to tell everybody. Yeah. Because it's fucking fantastic to see all these guys. And again, the first 3 years, the first 7 years, yeah, it's a great name, Future Stars of Wrestling. But I'll tell you what, man, that was the perfect name for what we did, because it gave everybody a goal to set forth. And we know 95%, maybe 99.2% of the people that come through the doors, they're not going to live the dream. So you can look on that wall and you see who has gotten there. And that you know, Jake alone, just in his training, right, he could probably tell you he probably saw 300 people, maybe more, come through those doors. Some guys that look like, oh, man, this guy's going to be a fucking stud. And yeah, 2 weeks later, he was done training because it was too hard for him.
Yeah, probably forgotten more people than have stuck through it.
That's true. And well, and it's funny about training because, you know, as good as you are, you also do come across, especially early on, people who, you know, when you're learning how to do a leg drop, you get, you know, ass cheeks on your head, and you get, you know, these people who aren't very athletic or, you know, don't understand necessarily the concept of pulling a punch and stuff like that. So you get, you know, being around for so long, you get so many different experiences of seeing, you know, the good, bad, and ugly of what it is to people who want to be a quote unquote wrestler. And it's crazy, you know, to think that, you've probably seen almost everything you could have seen in a class over the last decade, man.
Yeah.
Especially when he was teaching it for that short time.
Yeah. That was a rough period for sure. You know, but I think the tough times kind of make the good times even more special, because you kind of get to appreciate it, like, you know, when it wasn't the best, but then to see it, you know, it's cool to see as many people getting opportunities, like a Gregory Sharp or an Ice Williams, and just FSW in general. I think, like, with WrestleMania being in Vegas, it does a lot of eyes for not just the companies, but just the talent. You know, there's a lot of guys that I'm excited for to see them get chances, because we'd see it on, like, the East Coast, and you'd get to see these guys who a lot of the times would get a lot of attention, get opportunities. And, you know, the younger talent that I kind of give my two cents to, or if they reach out to me for some advice, and I try to just give them my perspective on it and kind of try to be motivational as far as, like, hey, take that opportunity, you know, when it's there. You know, because a lot of it, it's in your own hands. And something, and probably a lot of the reason my journey took so long was that I was waiting for stuff to come to me. I wasn't on the offense enough. I wasn't trying to get my name out there. And then when I decided to do that is when I started going to the New Japan Strong Dojo in LA to the seminars. And I remember specifically being on a show with Rocky and being like, hey, man, I'm ready for the Strong shows. And then it was like a couple months later, he reached out and asked me to be on them. And that's I want to say that's what led to that opportunity. So I don't want to see people let things pass them by because they're maybe afraid of the answer no. You're going to get told no so many times, and that's okay, because if you do the work, someone's going to say yes.
Right. Yeah. And Joe, is it fair to say that if it wasn't for Roland Alexander, you would never had Mike Modest, which means you would never had a school going?
No, it was actually Jack Slammy who got us in, because he was working with Roland at APW, and that's how we got Modest to be on the first show.
Yeah.
So, you know, despite the kookiness, if you ever see Jack Slammy on the Facebook, boy, some real interesting takes on there. But he was the guy who was the NorCal connection. He got us. Yeah. Back in the day, Bison Smith and Mike Modest, and later on that became, you know, Mike becoming our trainer. And what may have happened at the end doesn't take away what he did in the beginning. And if it wasn't for a guy like Modest, he was the reason we decided to start a school, you know, and because he became available to us, and he was a guy who had pro wrestling iron and stuff. And again, that's another topic, and we haven't really talked, you know, maybe a Facebook message or two. I know you reached out at one time. Like, I'd love to have him on the show. You know, time has passed, you know. Yeah. Hey, we've all gotten older and wiser, and sometimes things just don't work out the way you want to, but I'll never not have respect for everything that he helped do to really start getting FSW established. You know, we've taken it to a different level, but we may never have ever gotten to that level because I honestly never wanted to start a school. And despite the ups and downs of the school, that was probably the best thing that we ever did was start a school.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jake, you're living proof that, man, you know, guy like Mike, rubs off on a whole generation of talent. It's amazing.
You know, where would Jacob Austin Young be today if Tyson Tyler was his trainer?
I don't know about that. I honestly, besides FSW, I was looking at a Shark Boys school in Ohio because my dad lived there at the time. But I think, you know, that's really cool to say because I really enjoyed working with Mike Modest. He was definitely tough as a trainer with that old school mentality, but he took kind of a lighthearted approach with it, with jokes and stuff, because he did want people to succeed. And again, without this school, all the, you know, faces that are on the wall wouldn't be there. You know, I think of like, I don't know if I'd be where I'm at had I not been in this system, because without the FSW school, without that early training with Modest, I wouldn't have then the extended training with Remy and Jack and Saiku, who gave me their knowledge from the original New Japan Dojo and got that interest, you know. So if I could speak for me specifically, I don't think I would be where I'm at without it. Like, it's really so critical for a lot of the talent in Las Vegas.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, it just goes to show, you know, when you get a guy like Chris Bade now, you know, mixing in and coaching, it's just amazing to see. And, you know, again, I think that anyone who comes in has that vision of what they want to do and they really have that desire and passion. It might take you, you know, 2 years, it might take you 12 years, but, you know, it's continuing after it. And I think that you really have shown what it is to, you know, start at 19, man, and look where you are now. It's just it's spectacular.
Yeah, it's the journey for sure that you have to kind of revel in. You know, it's the experiences along the way, it's the people you meet and the friends that you make, and you know that will make this easier because, you know, it is tough. It's hard sometimes, but, you know, I think if you can, you know, it may be corny, but staying positive. I think positive mental attitude when it comes to the wrestling business is really important because it is a hard business and things can seem unfair sometimes, and they probably are. But if you maintain that and continue onward on your own personal journey as far as like what you want out of wrestling, whether it is you're trying to get to WWE or for myself wanting to wrestle in Japan only, you know, whatever it is, the be all end all for you, as long as you're sticking to your journey of getting there, I think you will get so much out of it.
You know, who knows, 8 years from now, you know, Jake can pull a Jeff Cobb and all of a sudden show up on Monday Night Raw. You never know. You know, who would ever thought Jeff Cobb was going to be on WWE?
Yeah, I know.
As part of a bloodline with Solo, out of all things.
Yeah. So surprised us.
Yeah, the Hawaiian side.
And again, it's this Friday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the FSW Arena, paid in full.
Stack show. We have an A-list show to go against AAA.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can't afford those AAA prices, which I've heard are kind of expensive, then come down and check out the show. And especially to see Jake in action, but also to see him get that moment, which
Yeah, maybe Jake's favorite old fan, Washable Marker, will make a return.
Maybe. Maybe.
All right. It happens. Thank you again for joining us. Jacob Boston Young is by far one of, I think, the most beloved wrestlers in the history of Future Stars of Wrestling. And, the way Joe talks about you, man, you know that in his heart, you're one of his favorite guys. So, congratulations on all the success, but even more so,
next to Greg Romero, but yeah, he's right.
Right. Wow.
I really appreciate the chance to be on the pod. I'm super excited to be at FSW and just see everybody. You know, it's been, I don't think I've really gotten a chance to see really anybody since, I had left. So it's going to be really cool to see everybody. I want to take a bunch of photos with everybody. And, I'm looking forward to, just getting a chance to be home for a bit.
There we go. All right, everyone, thank you for tuning in. And until next time, everybody, happy wrestling.